Welcome to Hey Girl. I'm your host, Bill Janice. Join me every week where I sit down with one of my amazing and talented friends who are experts in their field, and we have a little chat. Right. Welcome to this episode of Hey Girl. I am your host, Bill Janice, and I am thrilled to bring you the very first episode of National Gay Pride Month. It is Pride, everybody. I mean, you know, this show's pretty gay driven every day, but this month is going to be like, what's the word? Accelerated. I don't know. Anyway, so in honor of Gay Pride Month, I couldn't be happier to have today someone with me who is an absolutely fabulous artist, an innovative person. He is a content creator. He's a social media influencer. He's a communications major, and he studied LGBTQ studies. And he's just one of the most lovely people you ever want to meet. You probably follow him on social media under the title A Functioning Gay. And this is Zach Rickle. Hey, girl.
Hey, girl. How's it going?
I'm so happy you're here.
I am so happy that I'm here and that you're here. Finally, after a couple snafus, if you will.
We did. Yeah, no, and that's the thing. I mean, you know what? Good things come to those who wait, I guess.
Right.
I don't know.
That's right.
Full disclosure, just so the audience knows, you know, this, like a lot of interviews, you know, there's scheduling involved and conflicts. And Zach and I have been talking about doing this for a while. So I'm really glad that we were able to get it locked down today. So welcome to the Hey. He's coming to us virtually from Royal Oak?
Grand Rapids. Yeah, Rapids, okay. Michigan.
Sorry. He's coming. He's also a Michigander. I'm natively from suburban Detroit. I feel a sisterhood with you.
Yes. Oh my God. Absolutely.
Yes, girl.
We got to
stick together.
Coming
to us from Grand Rapids today.
Mm-hmm. Basically, it's you, me, and Madonna, just three best friends.
I know. I mean, squad goals accomplished, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
She wanted to be here today, but
she didn't work out. She's actually celebrating her dad's birthday in Traverse City, apparently, right now. So yep. I was like, guys, you can celebrate his 90th birthday.
Exactly.
I get it.
Could you believe that her daughter, I mean, I know we all remember when Lourdes was born.
Yes.
But you know how we always don't want to believe we're the age that we are? And the fact that her daughter's in, like, she's at U of M, right? Or she graduated already?
She's
I don't know. Graduated
from U of M.
She
already.
Graduated.
Jesus. Bill, this isn't okay. I'm glad that you brought this up because especially lately, because my birthday is actually just in a couple weeks and I will be turning 36.
And... Hey, girl. Oh, girl. She's 30. You don't, well, listen, I'm 39. So we're there. I'm there with you. I mean, you're better. I'd rather be 36, but yes, I'm just saying we're in the same bracket. So
we are in the same bracket, and it blows my mind. Like there are things that constantly come across my mind that I'm like, oh, when I get this age, and then I'm like, you're actually past that age. It's so bizarre, and it's so, especially with Madonna's daughter. I remember growing up, and I remember when she was born. I remember, like, during the whole Ray of Light era, like, obviously that album was, like, inspired by her,
My favorite Ray of Light. Her album, hands down, my favorite was Ray of Light.
Same. Yeah. Ray of Light is a masterpiece.
We're right here.
Yes.
We're right here.
It's right here. It's quicker than a Ray of Light, we are flying. and let me tell you, like, it's just, it's wild to think about how she is no longer that baby that we saw in the Mario Testino photo shoot and is now a grown woman of her own, and Madonna's celebrating her dad's 90th birthday. And I love that we're talking about her like we're friends.
I know. Well, it's like, when we're younger, mm-hmm. and maybe, like, let's say, like, you know, you're at like a family reunion or something, and there's always that distant aunt or uncle that's like, oh my gosh, you're growing so fast. And it, when you were a kid, you were just like, yeah, whatever, old lady. But now we're those people.
Right. It's wild.
We're the ones that say, oh my God, she's so old already. Because right. we want to just remember her being a baby.
Yeah. It's wild. And I feel like, and especially with this last year, I don't know about you with COVID and everything, but I feel like this whole last year was like non-existent. Like all of my memories of last year,
everything stopped.
Everything stopped, and all of my memories of last year were actually 2019. So it's really weird how like my mind is working with time, and I don't know. Yeah. And I feel like this year is just flying by. Like I cannot believe we are in June already. It's blowing my mind.
Girl, you know, I hear you. Girl. I swear. But you know what? I swear. Sometimes I feel like I have it even worse, where I literally just talked to a friend moments before we went on the air. And I referenced something that we did this morning. He's like, Bill, that was 2 days ago. And I was like, what?
Oh my gosh. He's like,
that's how the time is meshing.
Right. Yeah. You're like, no, it was this morning.
I just saw you this morning. He's like, you're sick. No.
Oh my gosh. Wild. That's wild.
Oh my God.
I get it.
Well, we have a lot to unpack here because obviously, you know, we're going to get into pop culture. We're going to get into social media. We're going to get into queer culture and history.
Yes.
And what a better not would there be a better person to have these conversations with in honor of National Gay Pride Month. So,
oh my gosh, well, thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you. This is my very first podcast that I've ever been a part of. So this is like a huge honor for me. And I'm excited to be here. I'm glad that you reached out and this is going to be great. I'm excited.
I love it. Yes, girl. Thank you. I wasn't planning on saying this, but I'm going to say it.
Okay.
Like full disclosure audience, like, we don't know each other. Like, this really is the first time we're talking because I feel like we're vibing so much. People are just going to think, oh, he's interviewing his friend, so it was easy. No,
right.
We're really...
Yeah, we have never met before. Right. This is our first, like, real conversation. And, yeah, no, this is, like, very real.
I'll start. Because it's my show, so I feel like I can. I'm kidding.
Get it started.
No, I was being sarcastic, but I just want to say, I'll start it off by saying I reached out to Zach because I became such a huge fan of his Instagram account. Obviously, he's on TikTok and you're on Twitter too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And on Facebook even too.
Yeah, and he's all across the board. I personally just I believe I my first time seeing him was on Instagram, and his content is so entertaining, so funny, and it's smart. And here's the thing. Most people, and this is not meant to sound in any way negative, but this is a reality. Most people do not understand or give comedians credit for being intelligent in a way. Because like they don't. You have to be smart to create those kinds of entertaining and intelligent jokes, right?
Yeah, wow. Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you. I appreciate that. And I you know, now that you say that and I'm like thinking to myself, I'm like, what do I do? And I'm like, oh my gosh, absolutely. Because especially with what I do in creating memes, there are so many layers and references sometimes in them that I don't think people necessarily get. And I wish I had an example right now, but I don't. But like, there's just oftentimes I'm referencing a couple different things, whether it's in the meme itself or the meme plus the caption or whatever.
Plus like the pop culture reference from maybe a decade ago.
Yeah.
That only some of us get, but I mean a large amount of people get, but your content, I want to give you this compliment. Your content is not just specific to maybe people in our age bracket. I think it entertains and caters and to everybody, and I think you have a lot of like young millennials that are engaged with you, which I love.
Thank you. Yeah, it's wild to see how this account blew up. Like that, my intention, when I started it, in August of 2019, and the intention was I have another Instagram account that I use. It's more like professional because I'm a videographer and a graphic designer by trade. And it's very heavily curated. And so I was just like, I just want like an account where I can just have fun and like not worry about everything being so like perfect. And so I started it as kind of both memes and personal. And I've kept it that way.
I'm sure it was a creative outlet for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was I was like, I have so much pop culture knowledge and just shit stored in my brain that I'm just kind of like, that I like want to get it out and talk about it with people and share it with people, whether one person likes it or 1,000. And all of the sudden, slowly but surely, I started gaining followers. And then once the pandemic hit, that's when my account really started taking off. So it was wild.
So I love that. So we're going to circle back to this, but let's just take a minute. I want you to I know, of course, that we already mentioned that you're from Michigan. Give the audience a little bit more of a backstory on you. Like, we want to get to know you. We know how funny and talented you are, but I want to know about Zach.
Okay. What? Okay. Whoa.
That was my very Oprah moment where you ask like the the most layered textured question, and then I sit back and I go, go.
Go, exactly. Who am I? Well, first of all, I am a Gemini. Yeah. I am a Gemini. My birthday is June 18th.
It is coming up.
It is coming up, yeah.
She is a Pride baby.
A Pride baby. And usually Grand Rapids Pride actually falls around my birthday. It's usually either the weekend of or before or after. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's always fun. So I'm always like, it's my birthday party. Like, hey.
Right, right. They're here for me.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, you guys did this again? You really shouldn't have.
But you should have. And yeah, I'm glad you did.
Exactly, exactly. You really should have. Should have done a little bit more, but whatever. Right. Yeah. But who am I? I mean, gosh, I've born and raised and have lived in Michigan my whole life. I'm originally from Benton Harbor, St. Joe, Michigan. I moved to Grand Rapids actually originally for cosmetology school, believe it or not. So I did that. I went to the Douglas J. Aveda Institute, ended up getting my cosmetology license. What day was it? It was New Year's Eve of 2008. So like going into 2009. And I remember taking that last exam at the licensing place. And I was just like, this is either going to be an amazing New Year's or a horrible New Year's, because you find out right away if you passed or not. And there's two exams. It's like a practical and a written one. So I had to take, and you have to take them on separate days. And it's just like this cluster. And
just anything to make it more complicated.
Exactly. Right. And at the time, I didn't have a car. So it was just like all of this, just like
another factor.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, but yeah, I ended up passing and it was great. Did that for a few years, ended up not being in love with it like I thought I initially was. And then I had, at the time, back in 2010, I met someone who I'm the type of person where I'm like, I go like 0 to 60 fairly quick. And so I met this guy, fell madly in love with him, but he wasn't out yet to his family. And he's from a very small town just outside of Grand Rapids.
That makes it hard. Yeah,
it does. But it was in that moment that I was like, I want to do something and help people be themselves and be comfortable, you know? And I want them to know that being gay or bisexual or pansexual or trans or non-binary or whatever is okay, right?
Sure.
And because it was really excruciating. And it was also heartbreaking because, I mean, he ended up breaking up with me. And I was heartbroken because I was so head over heels. So I ended up moving back to my hometown of Benton Harbor for 1 year just to kind of save up money and kind of like figure stuff out, you know?
And you can say shit.
I'm going to say shit. I'm going to be naughty. And
I just have to say, because it's funny, like I did ask Zach, but I ask everybody, so it wasn't specific to him, before we started recording, to like I just respectfully, let's all keep the language down. And that's really more of a reminder for myself, because I do have a potty mouth. And then we started laughing and I was like, you know what? No, I think in our context, sometimes when we say shit or bitch or whatever as gay men, it doesn't have the same connotation or weight as it does coming from somebody else.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So Shit. There we go.
So shit. Tell us about the shit, girl. The
shit. Yeah. And so I was just like, you know, so I moved home and I was just trying to figure out my life, right? And then I decided that I was going to go back to school for communication studies and figure out, like, if I can find a way to weave in LGBTQ issues with that. Sure enough, once I went to Grand Valley State University, they had just started an LGBTQ minor. So
oh, I love it. I love it.
Yeah. And I think I was the first class to graduate with that minor from that school. So,
mm-hmm. Hey, girl.
So I know. Yeah. So I invented LGBTQ people, is what I'm saying. I invented.
So you did. You did. Ladies and gentlemen, there it is. We've got the originator, the invigorator,
the remix, everything. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I feel like you could also say, hey, girl, in any context. It could be a celebratory, like, hey, girl.
Hey, or girl.
It
could be, or hey, girl.
It could be a greeting. Or yeah, it could be judgment. Like,
yeah.
Or what? Like, girl.
Exactly. Exactly. It just has so many meanings. So many different variations. Yeah. I mean, so that's kind of how I got my start. And then I graduated, so I was a non-traditional student as far as college goes, and I graduated when I turned 30 with my undergrad, and I don't have anything higher than that. Like, if anyone wants to pay for it, by all means, but I'm not paying for it. But yeah, I then kind of my world kind of went in a full circle in a way, and I started doing like this communication specialist role at a salon. Where I didn't do hair, I was just helping with their front desk and helping with kind of curate their customer experience and stuff like that. And then there is where I got into videography and I started creating videos on my phone. And from there, I got really good at it and became, for lack of a better way to describe it, my videos were very much inspired by like music videos and or like backdrop pieces that you see at pop concerts, things like that. So there was definitely like this very flashy editorial vibe that I gave all my videos, and it caught the attention of my current employer, which is the YMCA of Greater Grand Rapids, and I am now a videographer.
I love that. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So it's really cool. And it's really cool because my dad was a photographer and a videographer. Definitely did it more on the like the personal level. Towards the end of his life, he was doing it more on a professional level, but it is really cool because I would have loved it for him to see where I've gotten now.
Sure.
Yeah. So,
but don't you think this is just a perfect example of like, don't you think that when you are just authentically being yourself and following that gut intuition, even if it doesn't make sense on paper, so to speak, you progressed into these roles that you had maybe never considered before. Like you were like all of a sudden, oh, now I'm a videographer. Oh, now I'm working for what, you know, everything.
Absolutely. And what's really wild about it all is that I've had so many people be like, no, you don't have enough experience for this. So many people saying, no, you aren't a videographer. And I even still have sometimes, like I struggle to this day being like, I'm a videographer. Because my
you are
right. I am, but like
girl.
I am girl. What you talking about? But my approach, my pathway to it was so non-traditional. Yeah, and so, but absolutely, like just sticking to your guns and me, you know, struggling to find full-time work for 3 years after college was, you know, and being in my 30s of all things, you know, like, but I knew deep down that I needed to stick to myself, like, and what I wanted, because I would have been so upset and unhappy if I did, you know, a traditional, and this is no offense to anyone that does like a traditional, you know, desk job or things like that. But like, I just know that wasn't going to be me.
Well, you know, I think that I can relate a little bit in that regard, because, you know, I also grew up in a similar area as you.
Right.
And
where did you grow up again?
Harrison Township. So right, like just like 45 minutes north of Detroit, like Metro Beach area, okay. St. Clair Shores, that kind of there. Yeah,
yep.
Right?
Love that. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you know, the thing of it is, and I I'm going to make a Carrie Bradshaw reference right now.
We love it. Yes.
I don't remember the specific episode, but I do remember there was an episode where they were, you know how she used to, they always had this like brilliant shot of her at her laptop in her Greenwich Village town home that she could never afford as a freelance writer.
Exactly. But, you know, yeah. Like, right. Exactly. And she's always so distraught and she's always just she's just like, oh, like, I always love this. Like the.
Right. And like she's always in probably some like Yves Saint Laurent like nightgown or something, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, like where it's like, yeah. nothing about this visual you could afford as a freelance writer in New York City. But okay, we'll roll with it, right? Mm-hmm. No, but there was one of those moments, like, you know, the types of scene I'm talking about, yep. where she's just typing and then they have like that voiceover, right? Mm-hmm. And she said something about like, you know, you know that expression, like, are we shitting all over ourselves? And she said something like, you know, not all of us have the same journey and we can't compare ourselves. And she's like, are we shitting all over ourselves? Like, are we shitting everything we thought we were supposed to do by this age, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And that always stuck with me because I feel like I particularly do things differently. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I do everything right. I've had many failures. But listen, I feel like I've found, and I think you're the same, I've learned more about myself and my failures than I ever did in my successes.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like maybe as queer people, do you identify as gay or queer, or how do you identify?
I love that question. And I hope I'm not being disrespectful to anybody. I don't mind any of the labels. I'll say that up front.
Yeah.
But I personally find myself, if somebody asks me, I say I'm gay. But I don't mind if somebody calls me queer. I mean, believe me, I've been called way worse.
Right. Well, I think that you and I, being in, you know, in a similar age bracket, we grew up with the word queer being derogatory.
Yeah, it had a negative connotation.
Connotation. And that, I would say, only within the last 5 to 10 years, I'm going to say mainstream wise, I would say even maybe shorter than 5 years, where that word has really taken on a new meaning. And, but I would say us as gay men, so we experience a lot of failures because, or the fear of a lot of failures because growing up, or
the fear of rejection fear of what are people going to think if I'm my authentic self because it wasn't accepted. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just got excited because I was agreeing with you.
Yeah, no, but absolutely. So I think that, you know, it's interesting and it definitely preps us for life. But at the same time, we just experience a lot of either we do experience failures or we experience we perceive that we are going
discrimination
to
discrimination too.
And you see it too. Even if you're someone like me growing up in the Midwest in Michigan or we grew up in, I would say like the east side of the state is a lot more progressive than the west side of the state.
And, I'll agree with that.
Yeah. And so in my area, you know, I was kind of taught that being gay is wrong. It's sinful. It's immoral. There wasn't much discussion about trans people because that term is relatively new, at least mainstream wise and whatnot. But everything was very gay centered when I was growing up, and especially with like the AIDS epidemic in the '80s and the early '90s and things like mm-hmm. that. And so, you know, it was just always bad. It was not a good thing. And so I have had this fear.
And it was also fear based.
Yeah.
When we start talking about like the AIDS, you know, epidemic, it was, you know, people were terrified and rightfully so,
yeah.
you know, at the time when, you know, just like at the time of anything that is a new, ironically enough, we're coming off of COVID, like, you know, which is a different, it's not a sexually transmitted disease. But I mean, like when you have widespread fear mm-hmm. over health, It can get intense.
Absolutely. It can get really intense. And I remember my mom telling me that my dad was in a hot tub once. So I have an uncle who's gay. And I remember when I was really little, my dad was in the hot tub with him and his partner and some other family members. And my uncle had spilled his drink by accident in the hot tub. And my dad flew out of the hot tub because he thought he was going to get AIDS. And I was brought up
because of some small particles of bacteria of your uncle drinking it. And right. Then it spilled.
Right. Okay. And as far as I know, my uncle does not have AIDS, but I was brought up with this idea that if two men have sex, they are going to get AIDS.
Yes. That was the narrative.
That was the narrative. And it wasn't that they had to be infected or I don't know if that's the politically correct term, but I don't know if they have to have be carrying the virus or the disease. But I was brought up believing that just two men having sex, instead of making a baby, it creates AIDS. That's how I was raised. And it's so sad. And so you grow up with these fears. And then these things also just kind of turn into all of these like negative things. At least for me, they did. So I had a big journey about like trying to unpack all of that. And I'm still trying to unpack some of that, you know, today. So
sure,
that's probably why I'm so funny now.
What'd you say?
I said that's probably why I'm so funny now.
Yeah. Listen, you know what? I love everything you said. And I promise I'm not trying to flatter you by agreeing with everything you say. I'm really like, it's very true. And I don't know if it's because we both grew up in the same Midwest or what, but
yeah.
I had very similar experiences, so I can get it. And I think it was just also fear-based. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, you know, we were told that if two men were together that they were going to get AIDS. Mm-hmm. Even if you know, there was no infection on either of them prior to that. And I think that's a fear-based narrative. And when you're young, you don't know what to believe except for what's on the news.
Right.
Or what your conservative family members are telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you, I grew up, because I grew up in a very conservative, right-wing, Republican, Christian, Pentecostal household. Like, we went to church 3 times a week.
Woof.
Sunday? Yeah, girl. No, that deserves a drink. I'm going to take a drink. I know you're not, you don't drink, but
I need to take a drink just because I'm like, oh, I feel that. That is wild.
It was wild. We went on Sunday morning and then Sunday night and Wednesday night.
No offense. That sounds awful.
it was, but you know, but I'm just...
Oh, like church has always been really hard for me, but maybe that's just because I'm filled with Satan.
I think for me, I had grown up in it from like before I can remember.
Yeah.
You were already kind of programmed to believe that this is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
This is the right way.
Yeah.
And if you're having gay thoughts, they're lies from the devil, mm-hmm. or it's not right. Like the church I went to actually, I think, subscribed to the idea of that being gay doesn't even exist.
Right.
It's you being deviant. You're the freak. You're the deviant. You're giving in to the devil. All these things, right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I always thought my youth pastor was really hot, but no.
I completely feel that. I have had similar situations.
It was getting a little too deep. I had to tell a joke there, but it's a true joke. I really was like, but you're cute.
But you're so
I'm like,
hot.
You can't tell me you haven't had a few dicks in your mouth.
Right, exactly. No. Yeah, exactly. Right. And he probably did, let's be honest.
Probably did. Mm-hmm. But
actually, I've got to start. Let's circle back to that because I actually have a story.
Let's
about
circle back.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, no, I just, we can talk it now. Yeah. I mean, tell me now. I guess, before we circle back to it, I guess the question that I would like to ask you in this moment, if you're okay with it,
yeah,
is that where do you, I got to think of the best way to word this.
Sure.
When growing up as we have,
mm-hmm.
where do you find yourself separating those types of ideals and those types of things that were kind of embedded, instilled, and maybe even programmed in us as young children
mm-hmm.
to get to the point where you start accepting yourself and start saying to yourself, because that's a big journey. I just remember always having, I always remember having thoughts about other boys that were my age. Mm-hmm. When you, like, around the time you start going through puberty, right?
Yeah.
It was never about girls, ever. But the whole time I kept internally condemning myself because I'm a sinner. I'm wrong. I'm going to hell.
Right.
I'm hateful. No one will ever love me, and I can't tell anybody this. Like, how, for you, did you get to that point where you were like, no, I'm not going to subscribe to that idea anymore because it's completely inaccurate?
Right. Firstly, I have to say, when you said that's just now, it made me think of the Oprah interview with, like, were you silent or were you silenced? And it was just, the cadence was perfect. So,
honey, you can compare me to Oprah any day of the week. I hope that I am the gay Oprah.
Oh, you
day.
Are. Yes. I also will root for that so hard. But that's a really good question of how I think that
I would imagine it was I would imagine that was a struggle. I know it was a struggle for me.
Yes.
To come to terms with the fact that the romantic, emotional, and physical emotions and feelings and thoughts that I was experiencing towards other men was always told to me that was unnatural.
Right.
And even to the point that it was not only unnatural, that it was false. Like, if you're feeling that way, there is something medically wrong with you.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I was fed a lot of those same things. And I think for me, firstly, so that all said, and even the thing that I said about my dad, my parents, I didn't really realize how progressive they were in raising me and my brother and my other siblings. Until I was in college and learning about gender studies and things like that. Because originally, before I switched to an LGBTQ studies minor, I was a gender studies minor. And so I was in these gender classes, and I took this one class called Gender and Communication. And we were all just kind of talking about our childhoods growing up. And almost every single guy in the class was like, yeah, if I played with Barbie dolls, if there was anything that was deemed effeminate, and I started playing with it, whatever, I was not only told not to do it, I was punished for it. Blew my mind, because my parents, I played in my mom's skirts at a very young age, and I was never stopped. In fact, my dad would always get the video camera out and start recording me, and I'm running around the house in her skirt singing Little Mermaid songs and Cinderella songs.
I loved
the Disney movies, and I was always obsessed with all of the female characters, especially the villains for some reason, which is really funny. Like Maleficent.
Ooh, girl.
Stan Maleficent. And, yeah.
Who's your favorite Disney villain?
Maleficent. By far. Maleficent.
I think like the Sea Witch, Ursula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ursula.
Personally,
Ursula is a close second, but Maleficent, I've always found her just so iconic. This is so bizarre and weird, but I've always loved capes and like drapey clothing. So I
love that.
Yeah. So I mean, Maleficent is just like a walking cape, and so obsessed.
Yeah, she's the manifestation of your imagination.
Exactly. And so, so growing up, I had this really weird mixed view of like, be yourself, but also being gay is wrong, right? And then...
it was like, be yourself, but only under this umbrella.
Kinda, yeah. Like, it was just kind of like, because, my parents always encouraged me to follow my passions, and I was always an artistic child. And so I was, always into drawing and trying to go that route while I was in school, and or dancing or music, and that was never discouraged. And everyone else that I've known kind of growing up, that was never encouraged. Or if it was encouraged, it was behind closed doors. Like, that was never like talked about. So, growing up, I've always had this sense of marching to the beat of my own drum. And I do want to give, like, as cliche or as cheesy this might sound, I do want to give Madonna some credit there, because with all of her songs, and I'm a huge Madonna fan. You probably will never meet a bigger Madonna fan. And so with all of her songs being about, you know, empowerment and self-love and acceptance and being strong, you know, I think I've always had that in my brain that you have to be yourself. And like, why would you ever be anything else? And again, with this interesting environment that I was raised in, where it was like, okay to be myself in certain ways, I had the very, I guess you could say I have a privilege of the fact that, you know, I kind of knew deep down that if I were to eventually come out one day, because so let me backtrack a little bit. When I was really young, probably around the age of 4 or 5, I started playing doctor, you know, with the neighbor kids.
Okay.
And, the neighbor kids were quite older than me. And that's when I kind of learned about sex and sexuality. Or I shouldn't say sexuality, but I learned about sex. And the male part of sex always intrigued me more than the female part. So that's kind of when I first knew. And then I learned about what being gay was when I was, like, the actual term gay, probably around the age of 10. And I loved the Power Rangers. Loved, I think it was Zach and Tommy from the Power Rangers.
I think we all did, girl. Yeah.
Like, give me that Green Ranger. And, like, I'll play his flute. and so I remember saying in the car, just out of nowhere, I said, oh, yeah, I think Tommy's cute. And my sister, well, she's not my sister. But at the time she was my sister and, that was, and I was throwing some shade there, but, she goes, ew, you're gay.
That's okay. You didn't say her name. Do you want to say her name?
No, I don't.
Okay.
And so,
then it was no shade. It was
exactly,
no shade.
Exactly. And so, she goes, ew, you're gay. And I immediately started bawling because the way that she said it, and then the way that both my dad and my stepmom reacted at the time, I knew that it was the worst thing anyone could ever say or do at that moment, right? And so that was where I just started getting all of these mixed ideas about what being gay was and everything. So it was definitely bizarre. So,
and like, why was it wrong? And like, why... Yeah, right.
And then I was raised, and then I went to school in a Lutheran school from 3rd grade through 9th grade. So I was brought up again in all of those and all of that schooling that being gay is wrong. I remember when Ellen came out on her sitcom and
I remember that. Yep.
Yep. And that was a huge, huge deal. For all the listeners out there, you need to understand that was unheard of at the time. Like Ellen was massive. That sitcom was massive. And I know that we all know her story and I know that people think she's problematic these days and whatnot, but like, you have to understand that back then, like that was a career ruiner. Like, and it did.
It was. Yeah.
And it did. And
I remember, there was a magazine cover that's kind of flashing to my brain right now.
Time magazine.
I want to think it was Time magazine. Yeah. And if she just said, yes, I'm gay was the headline.
Yep.
And I remember going to youth group at my church at that time, and my youth pastor ridiculed it. I had a youth pastor that literally said, I think all homosexuals should be lined up and shot.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was already like 13 or 14 or whatever, or maybe 12. I don't know, but you get it. Mm-hmm. Like, I was at that point where I was already having those thoughts that I'm different than everyone else.
Yeah.
So can you imagine like what that felt like? And this isn't about me. I'm just giving a personal example.
Yeah, no, like, I agree.
Everybody in our situation must have felt that.
Yeah, absolutely. When you, it's because those are such formative years, right? Like between the ages of 8 and like 15, so formative. You're like, you're developing your personality. You're developing, you're learning the things that you like in all facets of life. And so it is... when you hear these such negative things about something that is just so you.
But also so natural to you.
Yeah. It's really, really, it's sad. So I'm sorry that happened to you. That sucks.
Oh, well, thank you.
That sucks. But yeah. And so to a long-winded answer to your question, I started accepting.
Okay, girl, I get long-winded all the time.
Yeah,
don't worry.
Yeah. So I came out actually at the age of 16. It was.
Oh wow!
I was really, really young. Actually, I might have been 15. I think that it was I was about to turn 16. And
good for you.
Thanks. Yeah. And it was just one of those things where I've always been really close with my mom, and we're still close to this day. Love her. She's the most important thing to me.
I love that.
But we were at the time, we're having a lot of fights. And this is what's really bizarre about this whole thing, right? So after all this upbringing and these mixed signals and whatnot, so she and I got in a fight, and I remember her being like, "You're out of the house. Like, I don't want you in this house anymore. Like, you need to move out."
Oh no.
Yeah. And I was like, again, I was about 15 at the time. And I remember deep down that if I told her that I was gay, I wouldn't get kicked out of the house, which you'd think would be the opposite, right? Especially at the time, you'd think that people would be like, "Oh, you're gay. You're definitely out of the house." I don't know how I knew that. But sure enough, I came out to her in a letter, and she did not kick me out of the house, and we worked on it. And she didn't love the idea right away, but I was very fortunate that she, again, did not kick me out of the house, and we worked through it. And, you know, and now she's my biggest supporter, and has been my biggest supporter for a very long time. I mean, she's always supported me, but like, you know,
I love that. Yeah. That's great.
I'm very fortunate that being my authentic self has worked more, has done more good than bad for me.
Than bad. Yeah. Oh, I love that you say that, because I think a lot of times as members of the LGBTQ+ community, mm-hmm. We're so used to seeing or hearing our stories told through a great deal of struggle. Mm-hmm. And that is, there's definitely a lot of validity there, but it's always so refreshing to hear somebody have the story where, yes, you get to the point where you're like, yes, it was internally hard, and mm-hmm. there were some things I had to work out within myself, but when I came out to the people around me, that they were supportive, and I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was very, very lucky. Like, my siblings were all okay with it. My dad, so again, with everything that I've heard my dad say, when I came out to him, I was shocked by his response. He had the best response out of anyone that I came out to.
Oh, I love it.
I was on the phone, I was sobbing. I had another fight with my mom, and I was sobbing, and I was like, "Dad, I have something to tell you." And he was like, "What?" And I was like, "I'm gay." And he was like, "Well, I knew that." And I was like, and here I am thinking that, like, he's going to murder me. But, right. But like, obviously, I mean, my dad, after I came out, was, like, again, my biggest supporter. And, I mean, he took me to my first Madonna concert before I came out. He took me to my first Cher concert before I came out. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, he knew. He definitely knew.
Girl, I love that. Yeah. I love that. I mean, you know, what a blessing. I love that. That's really amazing.
And I was very lucky, yeah.
You know, not everybody has had that experience, mm-hmm. but it's actually so inspiring to hear that happens. And I do think that we are moving culturally and society to more of a place like that, mm-hmm. you know. Absolutely. I think when we were younger, it was still so... I'm not sure if this is the right word, but it was still so kind of taboo, and it was still mm-hmm. reflected on in a negative light.
It absolutely was. And especially, and that's kind of regional, right? Like maybe in New York and in San Francisco, LA area, maybe it was a little bit more accepted at the time when we were growing up, but in the Midwest where we were, that was not the narrative that we were told. So
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, but I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. So you know what's funny is that even me with my coming out story, I have an older sister, and I hadn't quite talked about it with her yet or anything. For me, real quick, my story was that, yes, I grew up in Michigan and was doing the thing, right? Mm-hmm. I was a ballet dancer. I mean, how could you not know, right?
Love.
But like...
we love it.
But yes, of course, full disclosure, there are straight ballet dancers, but I'm just saying, I was already me loving Cher, Madonna loving me, yeah. wearing glitter everywhere, and a ballet dancer. It's like, come on, all
right,
come on.
Right.
So, Anyway, I couldn't come out to my family until I had already moved away. I personally needed that that distance slash detachment, I guess.
Sure.
From the current situation, because I personally felt so consumed with all the ideals that we just talked about, where that it was just, this was just not right or normal. This wasn't normal, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And so I moved to Chicago, where I felt like I could be the nearest big city that I, from Detroit, that I felt like I could be myself. Mm-hmm. And then I never really had a big coming out moment there because, I mean, I'm me, so people just assume, like, I act the way I act, right?
Yeah.
There it was like, all right, you know, the friends I met, it was always just assumed, accurately assumed and implied. Mm-hmm. And so my coming out moments, so to speak, were over the phone with family members to finally be like, no, like this, I need to tell you this, right?
Yeah.
And I do remember the one funny part of this is that I did want to mention is that my older sister, I was talking to her on the phone one day, and I'm in Chicago, she's in Detroit, and I was always very careful about what pronouns I used because I was still trying to hide my homosexuality from her.
Yeah.
Because I also felt like I wanted to tell her in person and et cetera, all these other reasons.
Sure.
And we were talking about a date I had gone on, and I was very careful not to just switch the pronouns. I was like, but not necessarily switch them to female. Uh-huh. I was just like, she's like, oh, you went on a date? I said, she's like, how, you know, like, what did you think? I was like, it was cool. We had fun. Like, I didn't say male or feminine pronouns,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it was really, really funny because she actually called me out on it, but unintentionally she caught herself. She's like, well, why don't you think you like him? I mean, her. Why don't you like her? Like,
you're like, that is my story to tell. Oh my gosh. That's kind of really sweet though.
That was very sweet. Telling my mom was not as sweet, but my sister, that was really fun.
Aww, yeah. I'm glad that you had that. Yeah. It's so challenging. Even if you know, even like me, like deep down knowing that like things were going to be okay. It's terrifying because you assume the worst. Right. And so.
Totally. Yeah.
And because you have to brace yourself for that. It could be the worst. And I know, and we probably both know.
And it could be for some people. Yeah.
For some people, we both know people, I'm sure, who have had the worst happen to them. And that's super unfortunate. But
then that's when, not to say that it makes it better, but just to add on to that, mm-hmm. is that that's when I think what we talk about in our community, that we choose our family.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, like Rina Sawayama says, chosen family.
Yes, girl. And, you know, and I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for the people that I chose to be the family, you know, and I'm sure you feel the same way.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So tell me, all right, so let's talk about a functioning gay.
A functioning gay. How do you become one?
Yeah, exactly. How do we function well, girl?
Yeah, come on. Right. Seriously.
Tell me a little bit about the creation of that in the name, which I think is brilliant. I come from a pretty strong marketing background, so I I'm not trying to flatter you. I am one of your biggest fans.
Oh,
seriously.
Thank you. I'll follow me until you love me, paparazzi.
I love you, girl. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Come on, Gaga.
Yeah, so
tell me how we started this.
Yeah, so in 2019, like I said, I was just looking for like a creative outlet. I felt like I was, a lot of the stuff that I was doing at the time, especially professionally, I was all very heavily curated. And I was just like, I need something that's just like fun and taps into my pop. Like, I'm obsessed with pop music specifically. Like, I love pop culture, but like pop music specifically is just like my sweet spot. And I was just like, I just want to like do something that just dumps my knowledge, but also make it funny and just whatever. Right. And so, I was at the gym one day and one of my best friends, his name is Eris. Shout out to you, Eris, cause I know you'll be listening to this.
Yes. Hey girl.
Hey girl. But I was talking to him and all of a sudden when it just popped in my head, I said, a functioning gay. Because I was thinking about Mean Girls, where you meet Damien, and she's like, he's almost too gay to function. And I was like, well, what if I was a functioning gay?
And that's so brilliant. I really like that.
Thanks. Yes. Yeah. And so I was, and I love Mean Girls. Like, Mean Girls is my all-time favorite movie. And I mean, who doesn't love Mean Girls? I think that there's a problem if you don't love Mean Girls. There's a huge problem if you don't love Mean Girls. And so,
and I love it. We full disclaimer, we are the community of inclusion, but if you don't like Mean Girls, you can get the fuck out.
Yeah, get the fuck out. Exactly. I don't know her. And so,
I don't know she. Who's she?
Yeah. Who is she? What? But yeah, and so, and my friend Eris is brilliant and has a great, you know, he has a really good eye for taste and things that are just good, you know, like he's just got good taste. And so, and when I ran that across him, he was like, no, I think that's kind of a really good idea. And I was like, all right, I think I'm just going to go for it. And again, it was just going to be, I had no intentions of making it like something like massive. It was just, I needed something just fun as an outlet. So whether I was going to get 20 followers, and it was also a personal account as well. And so like, I think the first thing that I was doing, I was just like being douchey and like, you know, flexing or something, just super dumb. But I was just like, yeah, let's just do it. And then all of a sudden the memes started coming out, and it was just kind of just, you know, happening. And then the pandemic hit, and that is, I made a meme where I re-edited Gaga's infamous, there can be 100 people in the room and 99 don't believe in you. I edited it so it was like, I think the caption was like, Lady Gaga explaining how you get the coronavirus or something like that. And she,
I edited it
so that she's saying like, there's, you know, there can be 100 people in a room, but all it takes is one, right? Because that's all it takes is one. All of a sudden, and I remember making it too. I was right at, there's a bar in town called, The Apartment Lounge. It's the oldest gay bar in West Michigan, and I love it.
I've been there.
Oh, you have? Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We love Apartment Lounge. If you're listening, we love you. And
I will text me just so I get it right. Mm-hmm. And I will add the link to their information in the description of the episode.
I would love that. And so I was literally, I was meeting a friend there, and I was in my car right before we went in, and I had the idea, and I'll be right in. I need to make something really quick. And I did it, and I posted it. And it literally from my car into the bar, which was like maybe 20 feet, all of a sudden I just got, my phone was blowing up. It was like, and that was my first like viral moment.
Wow.
It was fun. Yeah. It was just really cool. I mean, a huge dopamine hit. Right. But then ever since.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. But ever since then, it's just started kind of taking off. And then, unfortunately, you know, obviously we had a pretty heavy summer with, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and, you know, the George Floyd murder. But with all of that, there was like a lot of really great conversation, right? And I was trying to figure out what my place was, because I was just teetering on 10,000 followers at that point. I was like maybe a few hundred followers away. And people, it's interesting because people, the more followers you get, people's perceptions of you change. Because new people are coming to your page. They haven't seen how you started. They haven't seen who you are, where you're at in life. They have no idea. I mean, especially for someone like me, they don't even know what my name is. So, and obviously with my aesthetic or whatever, like I do five memes and then a photo of me. So that's like the thing that I have going, because I wanted to keep part of it to be personal, and that pisses some people off, and I don't really care. But because every time I post a photo of myself, I lose followers. I just want to throw that out there right now. Every single time, it's wild. I'm like, why do people care? It's so weird.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I have assumptions, and it's going to make me sound like an egotistical maniac, probably. But I don't think people like seeing, I don't know. I don't want to even say it out loud because it does sound really stupid.
It's just me, you, and Oprah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. In our hundreds of thousands of our followers. You know, some people would consider me attractive.
Do they find it vain?
vanity is something, but I think that people don't like seeing attractive people have a personality sometimes. They don't like, and it was, and you know, and I'm sure we'll touch on this, but like, I didn't grow up, I had a very hard time growing up as well. On top of the whole gay thing, I had a huge struggle with body image, and I was an overweight child growing up, and I yo-yoed a lot, especially once I hit middle school and high school. I had periods of my life where I was very fat, and I had periods of my life where I was very skinny, and I have always struggled with my body. And so I had this really horrible, and then not to get, okay, this is just to help create context, but this is going to get pretty deep for a second. I was also molested by a family member between the ages of around 8 or 10 is when it started, and it lasted through I was 15. So I had, yeah. So I know that's really heavy, and it, yeah.
No, it's okay that's heavy, because this is real life.
It is, yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, we're always so scared. I mean, yes, we want to be entertaining. We want to be funny. We want to be, you know, fun to be around. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, real life tragedies happen all the time.
Absolutely.
And what I think a lot of times is, you know, again, I'm not trying to exclude any other demographic or community, but since it's Pride Month and we're talking about our community, mm-hmm. I will say that I think a lot of members of our community suppress those emotions and mm-hmm. experiences out of fear of being rejected, or out of fear of being told that they're being dramatic.
Absolutely.
Or that they're overthinking it, or, oh, okay, drama queen, get mm-hmm. over it type thing.
Absolutely. And I think that you are spot on with that, because I've been accused of that my whole life and continue to be accused of it. And I kind of just own it now, because I'm just like, say I'm dramatic. Maybe I am being dramatic, but I was like, this is how I feel. It's like, this is how I feel. These are my emotions. And, you know, sorry if and that I think bothers you, you know.
That's actually one of the wonderful benefits of over the last 10 years, this acceleration of the social media medium and mm-hmm. Platform, is that we can connect with people that feel the same way we do, even though they're not geographically close to us.
Right, exactly. Absolutely. And it's a really beautiful thing that we can find people all over the world, not just in the US, but like all over the world, who feel the way that you do, or like certain things that you do. So it's a really great way to feel connected and share these experiences. And so I bring all of that up because I think that you asked me why people don't like the fact that I post photos of myself. And I just think that, you know, they look at me, and a lot of people think, oh, he's this attractive white gay guy. He's being vain. And sometimes I am. And I have to say, I am proud of myself, for every time I post a photo of myself, I never do it try to being all like inspirational, like, oh, like, you know, inspirational quote while I post a thirst trap. I pretty much am up front in the caption of it. I'm always like, this is like, look at my body, or look at me, or like I kind of make a joke out of it sometimes too, but it's just, I'm like, yeah, it's a photo of me. Sometimes it's a thirst trap, sometimes it's not, but like, this is my page. It's a personal account plus memes. So it was like, it is what it is. Like, it doesn't, and so it confuses people. It's so bizarre. And I'm just like, why does it have, it doesn't need to be any deeper than the fact that it is what it is. So that it's memes plus photos of myself from time to time. So like,
well, that's, I mean, you know, as well as I do, that's their insecurities or their issues. Mm-hmm. The people that are having that reaction to that. Right. Mm-hmm. Of course it never feels good to hear that reaction when you're the one it's being, directed at. Mm-hmm. But I think you're doing it all right, and I agree with you. I think it's funny, because you post some really funny memes, and it's great, and then you post a couple pictures of yourself, and you're completely upfront about it. You're like, I felt fierce today, so here's but you know, here's the thing, I really hate that expression, thirst trap. Mm-hmm. I think it has, to be fair, I think it definitely started in a harmless way.
Sure.
But I think it has become another term that has a little bit of a negative connotation.
Yeah. I've never thought about that.
For whatever it's worth, I've never perceived any of your content in a negative way.
Well, thank you.
If anything, I think that it's celebrating body positivity, and your page is not flooded with that. Mm-mm. I've looked at, you know, we all have, we've all seen Instagram and Twitter and Facebook accounts that literally are just 100% selfies of the same person in a shirtless photo in the mirror at the gym, whatever. Right. And you know what? which fine do you? I know that sounded judgmental and it really wasn't. I was just making the comparison. But do you? But what I do find funny, I will say this. Uh-huh. I think it's funny when people maybe do post that quote unquote thirst trap and they're like clearly at the gym. And they look great. So I will give you that. I will celebrate you all day long for the hard work and dedication you put into your physical health. Mm-hmm. So bravo. Mm-hmm. But I always find it funny when they post like a quote unquote thirst trap, but then they try to put some sort of like other spin on it where they're just like you know, like,
it makes no sense. That makes no right. Like, you're like, what? Like, what does this quote have anything to do with the fact that you're like posting
that you're standing there shirtless?
That you're standing there shirtless. Exactly. It's just kind of like, what? It's so weird. So that's why I was like, I've always mocked that. When that started becoming a trend years and years ago, I mocked it right away. And you know, this, I mean, like if people want to get offended by that, I guess be offended. But I don't understand that. Just own it. You know, you don't need to try to deflect the fact that you're being vain. Because I think that's
where it's coming from.
That's where it gets problematic, if you want to say problematic or negative or whatever. It's because that's what people are doing. So they're trying to deflect the fact that they're being vain but just own it. Be vain, you know?
Well, it's kind of the same thing when people – it always drives me crazy when people – when they preface something they're going to say with – I don't mean to be a bitch, but and it's like you almost want to say, but I bet you're about to be. Right. So go ahead.
Yeah.
And it's in a way, it's a similar way where they're like, they know they're posting a thirst trap, but they want to let themselves off the hook. They want to let themselves off the vanity hook.
Yeah, and I also hate
by saying it's something inspirational.
Yeah, and I also hate too when people post like these photos and that show off their body, and then get upset when people objectify them in a way like they're and
oh totally
yeah. And I'm not talking about like there's a difference between I mean it's all about what the photo is, right? And that there are certain photos where I have posted that I didn't think anything of where people will start making really sexual remarks, and I'm not just saying like, oh, you're hot, like they'll get like pretty down and dirty, and I look at the photo and I'm like, okay, this photo is like clearly not about that. I'm like fully clothed. Like, what's going on here? And I'm just kind of like, that's, to me, I'm not okay with that. But if someone, but when I post a photo of myself and I am, you know, not as clothed or whatever, it, for me, it comes with the territory. And I'm not saying that it's okay to, you know, like, I know that people are probably gonna be like, oh, he's like, you know, come at me for rape culture. That's not what I'm saying. It's just like, you have to be aware of the fact that like, if you're posting a photo that is in a seductive manner, that kind of stuff comes with the territory. And I hate when people get mad about it because I'm just kind of like, what do you think people are going to do? You know, and again, I'm not saying it's okay for people to be like, oh yeah, I want to, you know, be a cock destroyer on you, you know, like whatever, just like be stuff like that. That's unwarranted. But I mean, what am I trying to say? You can take the vulgarity out of it, you know. Listen,
being sexy and confident doesn't have to be trashy and vulgar.
Yeah. And so, but it's like when you post these photos that are a bit more explicit and do straddle the line of I don't want to say vulgar, but they're sexually open, right? And then these influencers get mad at people for objectifying them. I'm just kind of like, what? Like, what did you think was going to happen here? I just don't understand.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's actually, you're touching on a kind of like a subcategory of that conversation.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah. It, which is a whole nother conversation.
Yeah. 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 It's so, yeah. So I'm sorry.
Where somebody wants to sound offended, that people are objectifying them when they posted a picture of themselves in an objectifying way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, right. And I'm like, and it's on a public page. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what it is that you're trying to do, but whatever.
Well, listen, since we're here.
Yeah.
I'd really love to talk to you about your personal struggles and personal experiences with body image.
Yeah, absolutely.
But before we dive into that, unfortunately, we need to take a break. This episode will be a two-part episode, so I'm going to leave you all on the edge of your seat for Zach to answer those questions on part two of this episode. Look for it coming out this Monday. Thank you so much for joining us. If you like what you heard, of course, show us some love and subscribe. Check out our website at heygirlpodcast.com. Girl is spelled with a U. We've got a lot of great things going on there. We have the new Hey Girl Pride musical playlist that you can listen to on Spotify or on the website that was created by Dr. Peter Bonafato. So, Zach, thank you so much, and we will continue this fabulous conversation on Monday. Have a good weekend, girls.